The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. The countdown is underway to the United Nations Summit in September on the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs. Observers say the new Sustainable Development Agenda builds on the success of the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs, which helped more than 700 million people escape poverty. The eight MDGs adopted in 2000 aimed at an array of issues that included slashing poverty, disease, gender inequality, and access to water and sanitation by 2015. There has been some progress, such as reducing maternal mortality in Africa from 870 deaths per 100,000 live births in 1990 to 460 in 2013, a 47% reduction. But challenges remain, and we will talk about these challenges and some of the successes that the MDGs have enabled and the way forward with the SDGs. And to do that, we have our studio guest who is joining us for more. And he's Kwame Fosu-Lui, an African policy expert and health advisor. Mr. Fosu, welcome to Health Chat.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
It's very good to have you with us here in the studio. And let me remind our listeners that you can join the conversation by calling 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us your question or thoughts, as usual, at healthchat@voanews.com. or post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. We'll discuss the issue in the moment, looking at the MDGs, SDGs, and beyond. But first, access to improved drinking water and sanitation is extremely uneven within individual countries in sub-Saharan Africa. That's according to a report by researchers with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. The report published in the journal PLOS Medicine is the first study looking at access within individual countries in the African region. Jessica Berman has more.
According to a joint report by the World Health Organization and UNICEF last year, more than 2 billion people, or one-third of the world's population, will remain without access to improved sanitation by 2015. The Millennium Goal calls for cutting in half the number of people who lacked clean toileting facilities in 1990. A study led by British researchers found that none of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa was on track to meet the sanitation goal by next year. Last year's WHO-UNICEF report noted that the world has met the target of cutting in half the proportion of people without access to improved sources of water 5 years ahead of schedule. But that assessment is deceptive, according to Matthew Freeman of Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health in Atlanta. Freeman is co-author of the report by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He says it appears the global goal of increased access to clean drinking water is largely being met by emerging countries in Asia, which is obscuring the real picture of the availability of adequate water supplies elsewhere.
China and India, their rapid urbanization and infrastructure investments have led to dramatic changes in access to improved water supply. So globally that target was met, but few countries in sub-Saharan Africa have met those targets.
Those few include Gambia, Congo, Gabon, Malawi, Uganda, Burkina Faso, Guinea-Bissau, and Swaziland. Many African nations that appear to be on target for reaching Millennium Goals, Freeman says, are not taking into account the situation in their poorest, remotest districts. Investigators say the availability of clean water is highly variable, ranging from 3.2% in some districts of Somalia, for example, to as high high as 99% in Namibia's urban centers. Adequate sanitation facilities are equally inconsistent. In poorer rural areas, the researchers found, households were 2 to 18 times less likely to have access to improved sanitation and 2 to 80 times more likely to defecate in open areas compared to more modern rural areas. Investigators used statistical models in their analysis of data from 138 national household surveys conducted in 41 sub-Saharan African countries between 1991 and 2012. The authors say making the data on sanitation and drinking water available points up inequities hidden by national statistics. They note it's essential to improve basic infrastructure in areas with the lowest access to clean water and sanitation to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Again, Mr. Fosu, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we heard this report from Jessica Berman where she was really talking about sanitation. And water and sanitation has been part of the Millennium Development Goals, and it's also part of the SDGs, one of the goals. Now, when we look at the assessment, it says the achievement of the MDG drinking water target and, by contrast, the lagging MDG sanitation target. So this is one of the issues here, where one part of it has been achieved according to what is being said, and another part is still lagging behind. Yes. What is your assessment, really, of this specific issue? And then we'll go to the MDGs in general.
Okay. Well, when it comes to drinking water, it's for me, it's always a quandary when you actually observe what is said is achieved on paper, mm-hmm. and when you actually go to a country.
Okay.
You know, one can only make assessments by the standards by which people are living in the country. Mm-hmm. So if on paper they claim that they've achieved, you know, certain goals regarding drinking water and sanitation, mm-hmm. but you actually go to a country and you see thousands of people living in areas that are, you know, where there are piles of rubbish, where they don't have drinking water, where they don't have sanitation. And I'm talking about capital cities. Mm-hmm. Capital cities, not even, you don't even have to go, you know, too far, you know, as Africa, but right, you know, in this hemisphere, in Brazil, in the Philippines, and in other areas, mm-hmm. Water, you know, the Sustainable Development Goals, water is really something that most developing countries lack. Mm-hmm. In Africa, drinking water is an issue. Women have to walk long distances to get water. When a pump is built and it's seen on paper as a great achievement,
yes.
but that alone cannot be measured as achieving the goal of, you know, of water in any society. We have to have running water as it is in developed countries if mm-hmm. we want to measure these goals. We shouldn't have two standards. One for Europeans and one for Africans. Mm-hmm. And with Africa, there is this inherent belief amongst these folks who are negotiating at the United Nations, you know, my friends and my colleagues, mm-hmm. that, you know, the standards for Africa can just be a little lower. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be those standards as in Europe. And it's not just water, it's also healthcare for women.
So, yes. So what you're saying is that, for example, building a well should yes. not be measured as a goal that has been achieved in a given
certainly,
community.
Certainly not. Certainly
even though
not.
It provides clean water.
If it provides clean water, that's great. But actually build a system
yes.
that actually is generates water from, you know, from a water station, mm-hmm. and gives the whole town, the whole city water,
like,
plus also like just like here in the United
like
States,
in the US,
and also provides irrigation for small farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But building a well where, you know, women are going to be relegated to fetching the water, because in African societies, women have a social status where it's not equal to men, and mm-hmm. that's your job. And if you want to empower women, it's not just looking at, you know, little indicators, mm-hmm. you know, on your computer. It's looking at the culture and who gets affected by your policies at the United Nations. And that's, and I think fundamentally, even though the United Nations, you know, is really a place of goodwill, and they have brilliant negotiators, and Ban Ki-moon, and, you know, Babatunde Osmathan, who's the head of UNFPA, are people who are really of goodwill. There is something really lacking, because these men came from societies that had strong families and came from privileged backgrounds.
But yeah, one of the things that I spoke to Dr. Oshotimane several times. I've interviewed him, and one of the things that he acknowledges is the fact that women need to be empowered. That culture has such a tremendous impact when we talk about development. That the two should not be separate, because if we want to improve women's health, if we want to improve their social status, we need to ensure that the way they are being treated in society is always right.
I'm glad you said that about Dr. Babatunde Osmathan. As I said, he has a very generous spirit. However, when you look at the policies of UNFPA, empowering women is not, for me, empowering women requires something more than just words.
Such as?
It requires, actual deeds. When you say I'm empowering women, it means I am empowering her to get an education.
Yes.
Right now, the United States spends, this is just probably just the U.S. budget just for family planning is around $600 million and over, plus UNFPA over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Okay? And with that, they call it, they feel when you women have control over, contraceptives, that's empowering women.
Because of the, they can control the number of children they have, which economically is less daunting on a family.
Exactly.
And, I guess among other things,
yes, and
because
we,
there's a health aspect of this.
Exactly, and we all agree with that. However, do not provide African women with the most dangerous contraceptives. Give them the same safer contraceptives that are accepted by the Food and Drug Administration for American women here and accepted for the European Medical Association for a European woman. Do not give African women, contraceptives like Depo-Provera that are highly restricted here in the United States, not used in Europe, or Norplant that is not used in Europe, and also not used here in the United States. It was removed from the U.S. market because it was so dangerous and there were so many lawsuits against Norplant.
But there are still some women here that are getting the injection, no?
They're getting injections.
Yeah.
However, they're being told of the side effects. So less than 3% of white women actually use.
So there is still a matter of choices. They are being told of the side effects. Are you saying that the women in Africa that are being prescribed Depo-Provera are not told of the side effects?
Certainly. Just like here, when our research shows that people who are of lower socioeconomic groups, low-income women, are not told of these side effects. And therefore, there have been multiple lawsuits regarding Depo-Provera here, and they've been settling. Okay. So they settle these lawsuits so you don't see them in court. In Africa, women are not being told that. For 3 years, I advocated, and I was able to get the FDA to change the label to include research by Dr. Lee, who's from the Hutchins Cancer Research Center, that reveals that Depo-Provera causes an over 110% increase in breast cancer.
Okay.
There should be alarm bells going off in Africa, because this is the main contraceptive being promoted as the central optimum contraceptive for women in Africa.
Because I've been in settings where they have choices, they have options, and we're not trying to put Depo-Provera on trial or anything.
No,
this is an example you're giving.
Lot. Yes,
but I mean, I've been in settings where they have choices. They have the pills.
Yes,
they have the pills. They have the pill that you're giving to women for the whole month, and then the one that they use the day after. I don't even know how it's said, the technical word.
Yes.
So they do have options to choose the type of contraceptive they can use.
Well, again, they say they have options. However, what is being promoted by UNFPA, what is being promoted by the World Health Organization are what we call the long-acting contraceptives. Long-acting contraceptives are used less than 3% by women in Europe and the United States because of the high progesterone, and they cause an increase in breast cancer. The American Cancer Society has documented that progesterone increases breast cancer in women. Mm-hmm. And the problem is not having contraceptives, it's having safer low-dose contraceptives that are available to women in Europe because of the high rates of breast cancer. This is what most European women are using now.
Okay.
And that's so, really essential for African women, yes.
Okay, so we don't have anyone from UNFPA or WHO or the UN to react to saying.
Yeah.
Definitely, we take note of this and we will ensure to have a show to cover this issue, because what you're saying, these are very, very important, serious allegations. And and you know, the internet is out there, everyone can go and research, but it's important to have a reaction from this organization about this specific issue.
Sure.
So now talking about if I understand, I guess what you're saying, when we talk about development, the MDGs and empowering women.
Okay, so I'll go back to...
you insist on education.
Education. Let's take the United States, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's look at wealth in the United States. The United States built its country, and it's a country of wealth, based on principles of family,
mm-hmm.
Principles of hard work, and principles of education.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take Rockefeller, for instance. Most people who have built wealth in this country were not born with silver spoons in their mouths. Be it Rockefeller, Vanderbilt. Rockefeller, you know, came from a very poor family.
Yeah.
His father was, you know, a con man, a drunk. Vanderbilt basically started working at the age of 11 mm-hmm. on a Staten Island ferry mm-hmm. at the age of 11. And then we have, you know, others, Carnegie, these were farmers' children, and Ford.
Mm-hmm.
All come from really from their people. Rockefeller, for instance, never drank or smoke, you know.
Okay. So these are good examples.
Yeah, yes. And they never drank or smoke. They had, you know, culture of religion and very deep cultural values.
Okay.
So America was built on the foundation of family, religion, and hard work.
Okay.
Those are the same values that will develop any country.
Mm-hmm.
Africa. Africa has a wealth of entrepreneurs, a wealth of people who are brilliant. Entrepreneurs are born out of people who are struggling. They are the most innovative. They have the best ideas to actually create new businesses, to create wealth for countries.
Mm-hmm.
That happened here in the United States.
Yeah.
And that's what the focus should be. Sustainable investments in individual entrepreneurs, people who are brilliant, people who have ideas for health, people who have ideas for manufacturing. This is what is lacking. So the difference between Vanderbilt, who could get a loan to buy his first ferry at the age of 16,
mm-hmm.
and a kid in, let's say, Ghana,
mm-hmm.
is access to capital.
Absolutely.
And that should be an essential part of sustainable development goals. Not microfinancing.
Mm-hmm.
We need real money to build real industries in Africa because we are brilliant people.
And that's
missing. Women do not have access to tertiary education.
Mm-hmm.
They have access to primary education, but the problem comes where it's tertiary education. The Millennium Development Goals were created in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Much fanfare. Kofi Annan, a brilliant man, went to MIT. Okay, we had for 15 years we had the Millennium Development Goals. Billions spent on development. Not one university endowment by the Gates Foundation, by the Ford Foundation. Not one. We have our universities, our medical schools, all being run into the ground. No new universities for women, which is essential in empowering women, because research has shown that when women are educated, unwanted, I don't want to call it unwanted pregnancies, but unexpected pregnancies
mm-hmm.
drop tremendously.
Absolutely.
That is an essential part of reducing unexpected pregnancies, making families smaller. When women and girls are busy getting on with life, getting on being successful, being part of society, they do not have to cater to men
mm-hmm.
who are going to force them to have more children. This is not just, you know, rhetoric, but it is fact. Right.
But
it's it's worked in the United States and it's worked in Europe.
Let me say this, though. The MDGs.
Yes.
Part of the MDG goals have been to empower women to get an education. Education is part of the MDGs,
yes,
which is still part of the SDGs.
Okay.
So women and girls, empowering women and girls, access to education for all.
Okay.
It's all part of it.
Okay.
So how did we do that? How do we measure it, maybe? And you're talking about building school, which is a very good point.
Building universities.
Universities.
And giving scholarships specifically targeting women.
Mm-hmm.
Because saying that you're empowering women to go to school when there's no access for them,
mm-hmm,
where they're being, you know, basically subordinated by men who are not going to leave their positions, you know, to have women, you know, take them over,
mm-hmm,
you have to build new schools. And this is what happened in the United States.
Yes.
Universities were built specifically for women to
Absolutely.
Attend and educate women.
So,
and this,
so
is, this is essential for the empowerment of women in Africa.
And so if we look at the way forward, moving from the MDGs to the SDGs, I know that we spoke about the same issues earlier, mm-hmm, and you also talk about building hospitals.
One issue is that we keep talking about health indicators.
Mm-hmm.
Health indicators for women, you know, health indicators for maternal health, and so on and so forth. And again, I always look at expenditure and what we have to show for it. In this Ebola crisis, I'll use Ghana as an example, because
mm-hmm,
Ghana is my homeland, and I'll use this as an example. And Ghana can also be used as an example for many, mm-hmm, you know, West African countries. When you look at Ghana, when there was, in any crisis, Ghana has been a good friend of the United States and the United Nations.
Yeah.
Ghana comes to the, you know, comes up to help. During the Ebola crisis, Ghana was the command center for WHO and so many different agencies trying to basically get a handle on the Ebola crisis.
Mm-hmm.
What happened after the Ebola crisis?
It's still ongoing, though.
Yes. I mean, or when the, you know,
the height of the crisis.
Has anyone built a hospital for Ghana? Have they broken ground on anything new? No. Ghana still has the same hospital Kwame Nkrumah built since independence, Kolobo Teaching Hospital, where women and children die because they lack very basic amenities.
But whose responsibility is it? Is it the UN or local governments?
No.
Because we have to...
The responsibility is joint. If you claim that you're giving countries money for maternal health,
mm-hmm,
then part of that money has to go to infrastructure. It has to go to shipping medical equipment to the countries.
But when the countries receive the funds, there is a problem of accountability, because they can even agree on these goals and some of these things that are being written, but they're not obliged to ratify it, and they also have their own responsibility in terms of the way money is disbursed. We've seen mismanagement of funds before, and this is happened so many times.
Well, there's mismanagement of funds in every country.
Of course, I'm not accusing Africa.
I will submit to anyone that, you know, African leaders are less corrupt than leaders in Europe and Africa and the United States. The scale of corruption in the United States is great, and why?
Okay, that's another debate.
I'm getting back to the topic.
Yes.
I believe there's mismanagement everywhere.
Yes,
however,
of course, yeah,
the focus has not been on building infrastructure.
Okay.
It has not. China, the reason why China is exploding in Africa is because if a country says they want a theater, China will bring its workers to come and build a theater for the country.
Some people have complained about
exactly.
it, actually.
if the country wants roads, mm-hmm, China will bring its workers to come and build the roads.
Mm-hmm.
So there's hardly any mismanagement or misallocation of funds.
But what about tapping into local resources? If you're coming to develop a country,
we have
to empower people locally,
sure,
as
I
well.
Sure, we can do that. But first, we actually have to have funds that are allocated for building hospitals and infrastructure. That
yes.
has not happened in several years.
I agree with
you
on
that.
Decades.
Everything goes to service. It goes to population, you know, what they call family planning, reducing population. It goes to services, but it doesn't go to actually building the infrastructure of a country so that the people in that country can be self-sustaining.
And Ebola was a clear example.
Ebola was a clear example.
Absolutely.
So, and there is no government in Africa that will be provided funds to build a hospital, and the presidents will go and spend the money on something else. That has not happened. And if that has happened, we would like your listeners to call us and let us know about that. But it has not happened. I mean, I look at what expenditure goes to, and there has been really very little or no expenditure on building infrastructure in Africa. And that's a major problem. And this is why we have these health crises in Africa. And so it's a question of, if you want to empower women health-wise, where are the cancer research centers? There should be a Melinda Gates Breast Cancer Hospital for Women, Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast. There should be. There should be a Rockefeller Breast Cancer, you know, Research Center and Hospital for Women. That should be built. There should be endowments for our universities, just as your endowments here. Gates has endowments. Barbara Walters has endowments. You go, if you go to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, Barbara Walters has, you know, endowment for a heart unit. Mm-hmm. This is what should be, if you want to help Africans, help them actually build infrastructure and have scholarships for girls to come over here to the United States and Europe, girls who have finished secondary school, so they can continue tertiary education and become the leaders that we need in Africa.
And
that's
speaking
what
of,
essential.
Speaking of leaders, I mean, the President Obama's Young African Leadership Initiative is perhaps a step in the right direction.
It is.
And I think the MDGs also may not be the solution, but it provides a framework or a roadmap in terms of where the world should go, what the aspirations, right?
I
it's not the solution, but at least it gives us some stepping stone or maybe some idea as to where we want to go, right?
Well, ostensibly it gives us, you know, like, you know, guidelines, a roadmap to where we want to go. But from whose new cultural perspective? Are they going to respect Africans? It took the United States, for instance, 239 years from independence to get the Supreme Court to accept males and males and females to be married. Okay? They built their societies based on family values, you know, based on hard work and so on and so forth. Why should they force African countries to accept something that Africans do not see as part of their culture? Culture is very important. Respecting dignity of Africans and culture is very important when we are negotiating anything at the United Nations. Just as for the U.S. or countries that have accepted, you know, for instance, gay marriage, for them to basically in some way propose that gay marriage is in some way superior to polygamy or anything else is problematic.
I understand. Yes. I understand your point of culture and the issue of gay marriage is a very, very complex issue.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is that has been you know, stated clearly is the fact that it's a human rights issue. That's why it has been encouraged. But not to spend too much time on this because this is a whole different debate.
Yes.
Moving forward quickly because we're going to wrap in about 30 seconds. If you were to give one or two pointers as to what we should step up, we understand you talked about education. Building schools, building hospitals. What else in terms of the SDGs in September? What should we add? What are the big questions?
reproductive health. Reproductive health and having women have access to safer contraceptives. Family planning is important, but African women cannot, you know, have family planning that is going to cause other problems down the line, as is going on right now with the increase in breast cancer in Africa. So reproductive health, education, not just, you know, talking about education, but actually having infrastructure to build to build universities.
Okay.
That's essentially what is most important.
Thank you so much, Kwame Fosu. We appreciate your time.
You.
That's all the time we have for today.
Thank
I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.